Hey to all of you. Hey to all of you. Good to be with you guys. I'm excited that you've joined us for this new sermon series. It's called Honest to God, the Bible, the Enneagram, and why you do the things. Why are you guys looking at me? What, I got spinach? Spinach in my teeth? Well, listen. I did have a bit of coffee this morning, so I am a little bit wired. And this is a new start of a sermon series, so I do admit I'm a little wound up. But the thing is, this series is about being honest and seeing the ways that you are bound, the ways that your personality is bent and twisted by things that you're not even aware of. You do things in life that you're not even aware of, and it's the stuff beneath the waterline that messes you up. Why are you guys looking at me? Look, this is just the way I am, okay? It's just the way I am. Although, Jesus said, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So, maybe I'll ask Justin and Morgan to play the role of God here. And come out and look at those guys. Aren't they kind of like little angels? And they're going to do the job of unbinding me. So we're beginning this new series called the Enneagram. And if you don't know what that word is, I didn't know what it was 6 months ago either until one of you made me look it up. Enneagram is two Greek words put together. It means nine and symbol. So it's a nine-pointed symbol that represents nine different personality types. And the idea is that every one of us here is actually leaning toward one of those personality types. If you think about it, you group people already. You say, oh, he's such a dominant type. You know, he's so dominant. Or you say, oh, she's such a peacemaker. You know, she'll do anything to keep the peace. Well, what the Enneagram does is it makes this formal, and it helps us see not only that, but beneath the waterline, like, why do I do the things I do? When you were a little kid in a very dangerous world, you took on a role to fit in. And maybe that worked for you when you were a kid, but when you grow up, it no longer works. It can sabotage you, it can limit you, it can bend and twist and distort you. So brothers and sisters, if any of you were wondering why we're doing the Enneagram, this is why. Because we want you to be set free. We want you to know freedom in Christ, because you see, if there's things in my personality that I'm not even aware of, they will master me. And I'm only to have one master, which is God. And so we're glad you're here with us, and here's what I believe. I think if you stick with us for the next 9 weeks, you are going to understand yourself better, and you're going to understand the things that really motivate you. You're going to understand your own fears and desires. You're also going to understand what an amazing piece of work you are, that God made you this beautiful shape that you are. And here's the other part of it. You're going to begin to understand why other people act the way they do. Now, I started with me being bound here, because I got to tell you guys, I'm a beginner on this myself, okay? I'm just new on this road. I'm leading you where I have not gone before. So this could either be really good, or it could be really bad. And I don't know. We're going to find out. But here's the thing, as I've been doing this, I'm beginning to understand the people around me, and I'm beginning to have empathy for people who do life differently than I do. And that's my prayer for you as well. So, we said the Enneagram identifies these nine personality types. And here's the one thing you need to know. No personality type is better or worse. So you're not supposed to be like, oh, I really wish I was that personality type, or I really want to be that one, or I feel so bad that I'm this one. No, they're all good. They're just different. We're all in this together. So you don't want to be a different personality type, but here's the part of this model that I love. You have a certain shape, and you can either live out that shape in a healthy way or an unhealthy way. You can live out your personality in a godly way or an ungodly way. And what we want you to do is be able to get a handle on that so you actually know what you're doing and that you begin to live more in that, like, best you space. And each week, I'm going to explain more. Like, I'm going to get deeper into the Enneagram and what it's all about. But this morning, I'm going to jump right into our first personality type, which is called the Challenger. So the idea here is I want you to see this first personality type so you can get a feel for what the next 9 weeks is going to be like. I'm also doing this to honor those of you in this room who are challengers. Because if you are a challenger, if you're a number 8, you're like this. Look, don't beat around the bush. Just be straight with me and let's do this thing. All right? So a challenger, a number eight, which is the challenger, is someone with a pretty big personality. Like when they walk in the room, you know it. You know it. And they tend to be very forceful. They're not afraid to confront. They're not afraid to speak up, especially to a bully. They have no time for that. They are not afraid of confrontation, and they're often leaders or protectors. So now let's take a look.
Type 8, the challenger. Controlling, domineering, self-confident, decisive, strong-willed, and confrontational. Type 8 personalities are self-confident, assertive, decisive, practical, tough-minded, and energetic. 8s can be protective, resourceful, straight up, and decisive, but can also be self-centered and dominating. 8s believe they must control their environment and people in order to get what they want. As a result, 8s tend to have a problem with anger and with allowing themselves to be open and vulnerable. Healthy type 8s are self-mastering, caring, collaborative, open-minded, and very protective of the vulnerable and the less fortunate. Core fear of being controlled by others and out of control. Desire to protect themselves from others and to be in control.
Okay, so each week we're going to look at a person in the Bible that manifests that personality type. And today we're going to look at Samson. So I'm going to ask you if you're willing to get a pew Bible and actually read along with us, because we're really going to read a wild story here. It's on page 396. It's going to be Judges chapter 14, verse 1. Judges chapter 14, verse 1. And as you turn there, I want to talk to those of you who are familiar with the Bible. If you've ever read Old Testament stories, like the one we're about to read, and you think, you know what? Some of these Old Testament stories are kind of crazy. Like, they're crazy. Like, weird stuff happens in them, and they make no sense. If you listen to them, you're like, that could never happen. That's ridiculous. It's crazy. There's a reason for all that. Let me put it this way. Have you ever had a dream that was really crazy and wild, and it made, you know, you wake up and it makes no sense, but in the dream it all made sense? That's what these stories are. These stories go beneath the veneer of rationality and reason down to the gut, visceral things that are happening in our kind of basic, most primitive parts of us. So as I read this story, don't be like me, because I'm like, that could never happen. How did that happen? No, listen for what would this feel like? What's the gut? What's the emotion here? And if you do that, I think you're going to get what it shows. I told you that you can either be a healthy 8 or an unhealthy 8. As you listen to this story, I want you to decide for yourself, was Samson a healthy 8 or an unhealthy 8? Starting in verse 1, Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. Kind of commanding. He knows what he wants. He wants to get it. He wants to get it now. His father and mother replied, isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife? So the law of the land was, you're not supposed to marry those people. You're supposed to be marrying one of your own people. But you see, an 8 likes to be the bad boy. Samson is like a bad boy of the scriptures. He's like, yeah, I'm not listening to that. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. But Samson said to his father, get her for me. See that commanding presence? I mean, he's talking to his own father. Get her for me. She's the right one for me. See, an 8 makes a decision, and that's it. Like, it's a gut. Like, I know what I want. That's it. Let's go. His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power, so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands as he might have torn a young goat. An eight is brave. They will face danger. They will face confrontation straight on. They are strong. They are visceral. And they will get it done. But he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. Eights tend to keep their cards close to the vest. They don't let people in. It's none of their business. It's not your business. They tend to be very, they don't want to be vulnerable in any way, so they don't let people know about what's going on with them. Then he went down and talked to the woman, and I love this line, and he liked her. So sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass. It was a swarm of bees and some honey, which he scooped out with his hands and ate as he went along. Do you get this guy? Man, this guy's got a lust for life. He's like scooping the honey. He's eating it with his mouth and he's going to get his woman. I mean, he is all about the physical, passionate life. He's like, yeah, let's do life. Bring it on. But listen again. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some and they too ate it. But he did not tell them he had taken the honey from the lion carcass. Again, he's keeping his cards close. Now his father went down to see the woman, and Samson made a feast there, as was customary for the bridegrooms. And when he appeared, he was given 30 companions. So the Philistines give him 30 guys to be his kind of like his groomsmen and part of this marriage ritual. Let me tell you a riddle, Samson said. What's he doing? He just met these people and he's competing with them. He's just met them and he's setting them up for a challenge. Let me tell you a riddle. If you can give the answer to me within the 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and the 30 sets of clothes. Like, it's total, like, competitive. Let's do this, man. And so they're like, tell us the riddle. Like, game on, buddy. All right, who is this guy? Tell us the riddle, they said. Let's hear it. He replied, out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. Now, is that a fair question? Like, you know the answer because of what you just heard, but is that, the guy's cheating. Like, who could answer? Who could ever figure that riddle out, ever? For 3 days, they could not give the answer. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death. Did you invite us here to rob us? So here they are trying to help this woman. They don't even want to be part of this. And now they're in a situation where they're about to lose everything, and they are ticked. Like, who is this Jewish chump? Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing, you hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, and you haven't told me the answer. I haven't even explained it to my father or my mother, he replied. So why should I explain it to you? Again, nobody's business. None of your business what I'm doing on my own. She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. So on the seventh day, he finally told her because she continued to press him. She, in turn, explained the riddle to her people. Before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town said to him, what is sweeter than honey? And what is stronger than a lion? Samson said to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle. In other words, you cheated. Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power, and he went down to Ashkelon and struck down 30 of their men, stripped them of their belongings, and gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle. Oh, you want your clothes? Here are your clothes. I'll just kill these 30 guys. They're your clothes. Listen to that next phrase. Burning with anger. Burning with anger. He went up to his father's house. So he's like, I'm out of here. Eights tend to be like, you're in with me or you're out. You're in or you're out. I'm out of here. So he just walks away from the whole thing. And his wife, what happens to his wife? And Samson's wife was given to the friend who had attended him at the wedding. Now look at the heading. If you're looking at the Bible, look at that next heading for chapter 15. Samson's vengeance. His vengeance on the Philistines. Later on, at the time of the wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. So think about this. He's acting like nothing happened. Yeah, I want some sex, so I'm just going to show up. I got a goat. Here's a sacrifice. That's good. We're all good, right? We're all good. He said, I'm going to my wife's room. But her father would not let him go in. I was so sure you thoroughly hated her, he said, that I gave her to your friend. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead. Samson said to them, this time I have a right. I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them. You punch me, I hit you back 10 times as hard. So he went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail in pairs. He then fastened a torch to every pair of tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose. Now imagine that scene. Imagine the utter chaos of that scene. He let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. He burned up the shocks and the standing grain together with the vineyards and the olive groves. He burned the whole thing down. Just burn it down. Burn the whole thing down. When the Philistines asked, who did this? They were told, Samson, the Timite's son-in-law, because his wife was given to his friend. So the Philistines went up and burned her and her father to death. Samson said to them, since you have acted like this, I won't stop until I get my revenge on you. Pretty wild, huh? And it goes on and on like that with this guy. So do you think he was a healthy 8 or a not so healthy 8? All right, well, I want you to understand, though, that some of the best people in the world are 8s. And if, as a matter of fact, a healthy 8 would have seen Samson and opposed him. A healthy 8 would have said, this cannot stand, and they would have opposed him. So what's a more normal 8, a more normal challenger like? Like, how would you know if you are this personality type? I'm going to be reading from this book, The Road Back to You. This is a primary text that we're using for the series. If you go to the website, you can get a link to it. I'm going to read some sentences to you from people who are 8s, challengers, and I want you to see, I'm not looking at you for any reason, Maria. I want you to see if this is you, okay? So listen to these sentences and see if this is you. I've been told I am too blunt and aggressive. Doing things halfway is not my spiritual gift. I enjoy a good verbal skirmish just to see what others are made of. In relationships that matter to me, I insist on being honest about conflicts and staying in the fight till things are worked out. It's hard for me to trust people. Justice is worth fighting for. I can sniff out other people's weakness the first time I meet them. Saying no is not a problem for me. I welcome opposition. Bring it on. Bring it on. I make decisions fast and from the gut. I don't like it when people beat around the bush. I am wary of people who act super nice. When I walk into a room, I know immediately who has the most power. I don't have much respect for people who don't stand up for themselves. One of my mottos is, a good offense is better than a good defense. Don't mess with the people I love. I know I'm respected, but sometimes I want to be loved. I have no problem confronting a bully. If God wanted people to wear their hearts on their sleeve, he would have put it there. Under my tough exterior is a tender, loving heart. Now, most of us here might resonate with a couple of those, but if almost every one of those was you, you are probably an 8. You're probably a challenger. So what's going on beneath the surface for an 8? What is going on beneath the surface? What makes them tick? Well, we said again that they are a big personality. They radiate strength and energy. They're confident. They're decisive. They often have a big personality. They can be an introvert, but they often have a big personality. And their kind of stance towards life is, look, man, go big or go home. 8s always want to know who has the power, so they will consistently challenge and test authority. You might have a child who's an 8. An 8 never wants to appear weak, because to be vulnerable would be to appear weak. They think that strong people act quickly and decisively and don't look back. So when they're with someone who's like pondering and going back and forth and trying to think things through, they view them as weak. To say I'm sorry would imply that I'm out of control. And if I say I'm sorry, then the other person could bring that back later. They could use that as ammunition against me later. So I don't want to do that. So why do they act this way? Each personality type has a core desire and a core fear. So the core desire for an 8, a challenger, is to protect themselves from others, to be in control. And their core fear is being controlled by others, or being out of control, or being exposed and vulnerable. And remember, I said these can be very, very good people, like really loyal friends, people that you want on your side. But here's the thing. They're so excited about doing life, they're oblivious to how they steamroll over other people. Many 8s, see if this is you, they are genuinely surprised to learn that other people find them intimidating, insensitive, or domineering. They're actually oblivious to how their bigger-than-life personality affects other people. And many non-8s, so if you have many of you might be thinking, man, I'm not a challenger, but oh, I know a challenger. Would you be surprised to know that they want you to challenge them back? That this is how they do life. In fact, this is how they find out what's real. I'm going to challenge you, and then what you're really like is going to come out to me. They actually use challenging as trying to get close to people. So they'll be playful, they'll like playfully confront someone. They think they're playfully confronting them, and the other person's like, wow, man, I didn't do anything to you. What's up? You see how they totally misinterpret each other. So I told you that there can be a healthy 8 and an unhealthy 8, right? So if this is you, consider how the same traits in you could either be really beautiful and healthy, or really not so good and unhealthy. So let's get brutally honest with yourself for a minute. Are you a person of resolve, or are you just rigid? Are you principled, or are you just domineering? Are you tough, or are you just insensitive? Are you plain spoken, or are you really just a bully? Do you lust for life, or do you just lust? See, you may tend to do playful attacks as a way of making contact with other people, but they think you're like, why would he do that? He must think I'm his enemy. And for you, the world tends to be divided. It's clear. There's friends and there's foes. There's the strong and there's the weak. You're either right or you're wrong. There's good and there's evil. Okay, so if that's you, what's it like to be you? Well, let me say a couple things and see if this resonates. Think about our cultural political moment. Think about how divided we are. There are 8s on both sides, and they've been told that the other side is cheating and unfair and wrong, and they're practicing injustice. And if you're an 8, you feel it. You feel it in your gut. You just want to explode sometimes. So that's hard. How about this? How about if you're an 8 and you're a woman? You know, if you're a strong man and you speak up and you confront and you're loud, we call you macho. If you're a woman and you're strong and you speak up and you're loud, what do we call you? Another word. So if you're a woman who's an 8 in this political moment, this is a very tough time for you. And so I want to try and appreciate that. Man, I got to stop and think, what is it like to be in that person's head? So if you are a challenger, if you are an 8, and you want to live out a godly version of you, how do you do that? Our New Testament scripture for this morning is like a direct challenge to an unhealthy 8, like a Samson. Listen to what Romans 12, 18 to 21 says. And 8s, this is a command. And you are to obey this. If you are a follower of Jesus, you are to obey this. He says, if possible, As far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. At peace. You can't be at peace with all men if you're constantly confronting them. You can't be at peace with all men if you're constantly correcting them. Part of being at peace with other people is the ability to admit when you're wrong and sincerely ask for forgiveness. This isn't peace on your terms. This is the peace of God we're talking about. And being at peace with other people is about offering mercy and tenderness instead of judgment and bravado. Look at that next line. Never, never take your own revenge. Beloved, eights, you are loved by God. You are his beloved. But it is not your place to take revenge. If you are a Christian, you do not have the right to personal revenge. Because you are no longer under the law, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. You are under the law of mercy and grace. You are a follower of Jesus. So you can, and we want you. We want you to fight for what's right. We want you to fight for what's fair. But there's a big difference between that and seeking vengeance because of your own self-righteous anger. There is a huge space between the world according to God and his righteousness and the world according to you and your righteousness. And you need to own that, and you need to admit it. You need to have a little humility, because pride comes before the fall. Being overconfident of your own righteousness is wrong. Self-righteousness is a sin. Being arrogant is a sin. Dominating and trampling over other people is a sin. And you are not to be the source of factions and division and infighting. Winning at any cost is not godly. Sure, you want to win. Sure, you want to fight. But winning at any cost, no, you need to overcome these evil urges. You need to overcome them with good. So what have we said? We've said an unhealthy eight is domineering, controlling, impulsive, and often a bully. Perhaps some current political leaders might come to your mind. But a healthy eight makes a great leader. In fact, the greatest leaders, some of the greatest leaders we've ever had in history were eights, challengers. Consider these three examples. First, in the Old Testament, Nathan the prophet confronts David the king, who has the right to kill him, and he says, "You have sinned, you have committed adultery with Bathsheba, repent." And then think about Churchill, Winston Churchill. The whole country's in shambles. It looks like they're going to lose, and he refuses to bow. And his strength gives strength to his people. You eights, not only are you strong, people want to be with you because you're strong. And because you're strong, you actually give strength to other people. Think about Churchill. And finally, Martin Luther King. I mean, you talk about speaking truth to power. You talk about facing, like, danger. You talk about courage. You talk about someone who has this deep heart for the underdog and the oppressed. And so you see there's a beautiful, beautiful way of being this eight. So what are some practical steps a challenger can take to grow more godly as they interact with other people? All right, here's your homework. If you're an eight, here they are. Number one, give a friend permission to tell you when you're being too intense. You don't see it. You're oblivious. You need somebody in your corner to say, dude, dial it back. You're blowing people over. You need someone in your corner that can tell you that. Okay, number two, practice admitting when you're wrong and asking for forgiveness. I don't like that so much. Number three, practice mercy and tenderness to people rather than judgment. But here's the thing. If you're number eight, here's the truth. These are a sign of strength, not weakness. It takes strength to be able to admit when you're wrong. It takes strength to practice mercy and tenderness. So you guys, whether you know an eight, like you're like, oh man, I can see Uncle so-and-so. Like if you know an eight, or if you're like, no, this is me. Whoever you are, I hope this has been helpful for you. So if you're an eight, there's more resources on our website. If you're interested in figuring out, hey, what is my Enneagram type? You can go to our website and go to a link and find out. I'm going to be getting to more details the weeks go on. If you know someone who's an eight, I hope this helps you understand them a little bit better. So whatever personality type you are, as you wrestle with these ideas, We have to keep centered on the central truth. And this is it. Jesus went to the cross to set you free from your particular sins and your particular shame and your particular past. And then Jesus rose from the grave, proving that he is God in flesh. He has the power to save you. He has the power to give you new life. He is the ultimate victor over all evil. And Jesus is not only my king. He's not only my king, he's my coach. He's my mentor. He is the master craftsman of doing life well, and he is willing to have me as his apprentice. He's willing to have you as his apprentice. He says, come to me. I'll teach you. You can walk with me. And here's the main thing. You guys, if you have the courage to do this, what we're going to do these next 9 weeks, you're going to see parts of yourself you don't like. You're going to see ugly parts of yourself. But Jesus will not leave you. He will not forsake you. He is in this with you. He will complete the good work he began in you. He will. Amen.